Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
The build-up to this year's All-Ireland final was filled with all sorts of uncomfortable thoughts about how we were all going to feel when the winning team went up to collect the trophy. If it was to be Limerick, surely we'd all be bored senseless with their latest All-Ireland final procession and counting down the days until they were knocked off their effing perch. If it was going to be Kilkenny, the reality would slowly have dawned that we'd all been duped with the underdog talk. And of course they were going to be the ones to take Limerick down and would probably be off next year to do their own back-to-back All-Irelands. As it happened, the way events unfolded, it was impossible not to fall in love with both of these fine hurling counties.
Yes, Owen, I'm glad we agree on this.
Yeah, welcome everyone to the show. It just, Kilkenny for just obviously sticking in the game, that's not even doing a disservice to them. It felt like that's what it was in the first half because they were meeting a pretty bloody good version of Limerick and yet they were just about clinging on and making a game of it. You still felt at halftime this could still be a blowout, but no, they absolutely stuck it to them in the second half, and because of that I think we saw the best of Limerick, them coming through the test in the way they did. I mean, the only problem is it's a bit early in the year for some. I'm sure we all shed a tear for Ken Early, who missed it as he's on holidays, but for the rest of us who got to witness what happened yesterday, it was unbelievable. I should also say, Mir, before you launch into this, we're going to talk about Rory McIlroy's near miss later in the podcast. Already we've got a show out for everybody celebrating the victory over the All Blacks. That's out right now. But can I ask you, Murph, for your thoughts on yesterday's events at Croke Park?
Let the record state, Owen, that if 2008 Kieran Murphy had seen 2022's Kieran Murphy's reaction to Richie Hogan's point in the 63rd minute of yesterday's All-Ireland final, he would have been surprised. Very, very surprised.
Was it one of these off the couch?
Oh, well, I just thought that was such a brilliant moment. Obviously, you're dealing with, I think, one of the most stylish hurlers going, Richie Hogan. Last time they were in an All-Ireland final, obviously sent off in rather controversial circumstances in the 2019 final. Unbelievably likeable hurler, unbelievably likeable guy, comes back from injury, comes on in an All-Ireland final in this most, in an absolutely cracking final, like absolutely brilliant final. He comes on and scores a ridiculous point to get Kilkenny level.
Big celebration as well.
Big celebration. 7 minutes to go. Limerick are obviously the better team. I mean, all game it's been obvious Limerick are better. And yet Kilkenny are level with 7 minutes to go. And who the hell's backing against him in that scenario? So just unbelievable drama. Absolutely brilliant. The first half, like the level of the quality of the point scoring in the first half was off the charts, even if there were quite a few of those points maybe hit when there wasn't maybe a massive amount of pressure being put on the ball. So, I mean, if you've got a complaint to say that the second half was better than the first half, but the only complaint you have about the first half is that there were too many points scored, you know you're dealing with a very, very high quality game. It was. And I think you painted the scene absolutely perfectly there, because I think what we've seen from Limerick this year, just this unbelievable resilience. I mean, basically, and we'll talk about this tomorrow with Jimmy Wallen and Patrick Donnellan, but as sports fans, maybe we're not brilliant, we're not massive fans of ceaseless, remorseless, invulnerable excellence. So what we've seen from Limerick over the last couple of over the last three games that they've played, Clare bring them to extra time, Galway level with 5 minutes to go, Kilkenny level with them with 7 minutes to go, and just the way that they've closed out all three of those games, just unbelievable. And they're an exceptional team.
Oh, watching just Leo Messi in his prime scoring a hat-trick at home to Levante or something never fully did it for me, you know, as opposed to watching him being put to the pin of his collar in a big Champions League game and producing the goods, or, you know, a big game in the league or a Clásico or whatever it is. It makes, context makes all the difference. And you would still, if Limerick had gone on and won that match by 11 points, we'd still be sitting here talking about how great Gerard Hegarty is and all the other great things about their team. But it would be in a sort of a cold way, like a distantly admiring way. Whereas now we can talk about just how exciting it was to watch them pull it out of the fire in the way that they did. Although we should also talk about how amazing Gerard Hegarty is. Like the goal was so good. His pick, firstly, I'm glad Donal O picked it up at halftime. What I had felt, I'm always glad when the expert agrees with something that I had observed as it happened.
He's always really known his hurling. You nod approvingly to yourself when you hear Donal O say something that you agree, that you thought half an hour earlier.
It felt to me that the Seamus Flanagan backheel, basically little roll back with his foot, was deliberate. It looked like he knew what he was doing, as opposed to it just randomly hitting off his foot. And that's certainly what, although Donal Logue credited the move as being from another sport.
From another sport.
That sport.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was talking about like a little scissors pass, but with your foot, from rugby. Maybe that's what he was talking about. I'm not entirely sure either.
So that was a lovely little touch. But the goal and the pickup, I've never seen a player enjoy contact as much, in the sense that he seeks it out. It's like he needs to, it's almost like the great physical strikers in football again who want to feel the defender holding them, so they know where they are. They have a kind of idea of where they are, and then they bounce them off and then they score a goal. He did that with Richie Reid, and then a quick
quicker you hit me, the quicker I'll have blown you out of my way. It's basically what Gerard Hegarty thinks.
So that was amazing.
The goal was unbelievable. I mean, in the 2020 Ireland hurling final, he scored 7 points from play, and that's what's bringing down his average, because he got 2-2 in the final last year.
And then, 1-5?
1-5, all from play yesterday.
That point from the right-hand side as well, the one that Hawkeye initially... We might save our Hawkeye praise for tomorrow, Murph, but you know, Hawkeye stepped up on the big occasion after being doubted by many.
There's so many elements of that game that I just thought were just so interesting and revealing.
What was the most interesting and most revealing one then, if you can pick one for our Monday listeners?
Just composure, like just all the time, just Limerick's composure on the ball, whether it's the first minute, the 35th minute or the 70th minute. Like, they just backed themselves completely to, that pass is a tight pass, but that's fine.
They were a bit wobbly though. They were a bit wobbly at stages in the second half. A few of them.
Well, they were wobbly because Kilkenny were unbelievably good. Like,
they
threw
a few random sort of passes in and around the Kilkenny half back line. It sort of
that should mean that they tighten up in the last 5 minutes. You know, and they just never did. They just that's composure. Composure is not like it always goes right, therefore we'll keep doing it. Composure is like, okay, it went wrong the last time, but it's still the right thing to do, so let's do it. And I think that nervelessness under pressure they're so good to watch. They really are. And even, I have to say, even watching the Ireland semi-final, like David Reedy's point, when, you know, there was like four passes inside the Galway 45-yard line until it finally gets to Reedy, who's the man in the best position, who rifles it over the bar. I think that was the point that put them two up on Galway. Like, even at that moment, I'm just like, that is just exceptional. That is just unbelievably good, you know, death hurling, if you know what I mean. You know, like that, like this is what it all comes down to. Like, can you do it under the most intense pressure with the most intense scrutiny? And they did it against Clare, like Hannon's point that should have been the winner if it wasn't for Tony Kelly's miracle sideline ball, that Reedy point, and just that impact in the last 3 or 4 minutes off the bench yesterday. You know, I really didn't expect to love Limerick a lot more today than I did on Saturday, because they had won this final, and I do. You know,
to me as well, the fans were a big part of it. The occasion, like, as Declan Hannan said afterwards, we've 2 or 3 years of celebrating to catch up on, and you got that sense in the stadium, the scenes towards the end of the match. I think maybe even full time in the hill of both sets of supporters. just baking in the sun for a start. You know, there's a lot of sunburned heads there, but just absolutely loving life. And it's something that they, that Limerick haven't had over the last couple of years, which everyone from outside Limerick couldn't give a shit. Who cares? You know, you won your All-Irelands. But, you know, you can still see that it means something. They're in this envious position of, you know, they get to compare how they feel after certain All-Irelands. And you can't imagine the feeling get much better than it did yesterday. Maybe the first one, but like yesterday, just the way they won it and the way they got to celebrate it, and I presume are continuing to celebrate it with their supporters, just felt a little bit different.
And it actually really reminded me of something I don't think I was even talking about on the show last week, but I went to the Ireland semi-final, the Dublin Kerry semi-final last Sunday week with Dad, and we were sitting in the Hogan, lower Hogan, as Sean O'Shea is lining up the free to win it, you know, and Dad turns to me and says, geez, like, this is the heart of the matter now, isn't it, you know? And there were just so many moments yesterday where you're like, poor, like, the
this
next
is the heart
ball
of the matter is a good phrase.
Next ball,
the
is,
rest of this has been very nice to watch, but basically superfluous. It's all down to this moment,
you know, like, you know, for all the effort, everything that's gone in, you know, this is still the heart of the matter. And there were moments yesterday when it was the heart of the matter and Limerick players just stood up and did what needed to be done, you know, and Kilkenny players, you know, Kilkenny players too, you know, like, there's, like, as the clock ticks down in these insanely vibrant, highly pressurised occasions, you know, these are the moments that careers kind of hinge on, and that, like, that's it. And obviously we've got another All-Ireland final coming up this Sunday as well, and it's going to be the exact same for the, maybe more so when you look at, you know, the fact that there's, like, three Kerry players that have won an All-Ireland medal, and for everyone else, It's a new experience to try and win one of these things, to go and actually win one of these things. Kerry, like, quite a few of the Kerry players obviously played two finals in 2019, but this is it. Like, you know, these are insanely highly pressurized environments, and to not wilt under it and to thrive in those circumstances, that's what it's all about. That's why we love it.
We're going to pick this up tomorrow on the World Service, as you mentioned, with Jamie Wall and Pat Donlan. You'll have to be a member. You'll have to already be one, or you can become a member on secondcaptains.com to hear that chat, as well as our Finn McConville All-Ireland Football Final preview. But as the hurling was happening yesterday, Rory McIlroy was playing a very nice controlled final round of the British Open, not making any real mistakes of note, hitting all the greens, not carding bogeys, and yet still contriving not to win the tournament. The wait goes on for Rory for another major title. It felt, it was the perfect scenario in that I was watching the hurling, I was half an eye on the golf, but you're looking at it going, this is perfectly uneventful for McIlroy on the front nine. This is exactly, nothing earth-shattering is happening here. So I can still, from a purely selfish point of view, I can still devote 90% of my energies to the hurling until that's over, because Rory's not lighting it up, but neither is Victor Hovland, the player who shared a 4-shot lead with the start of day's play. So it was all nice and steady. Unfortunately, it remained just nice and steady all the way for McIlroy, even as Cameron Smith went on the rampage, birdieing 5 holes in a row. So on a day when McIlroy, he might have gone into it thinking, and certainly the way Hovland was playing, he probably after a few holes was thinking, steady McIlroy will do this, let's not do anything crazy here. He actually needed a bit more spectacular McIlroy on occasions, or basically just needed to hold a couple of feckin' putts to win that tournament, which he didn't manage to do.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking, to be honest, because again, it wasn't a last day collapse. You know, he couldn't point to one, you know, if I just played that one hole a little better. It was just a succession of really good putts. His pace on the greens was really good all day. Like, there was no panic at any stage. Like, all of his par putts were like, we're not, you know, he kick in pars. He two putted every single green, and that accounted for, like, and he would have, you know, he would have birdied 18 if he didn't have to try and go for the hole out eagle from you know, from 10 yards short. I mean, in a lot of ways, he did exactly what needed to be done. Show the professionalism, calmness, composure. But see, this is it. This is scoreboard journalism, you know, in so many ways. You know, like, it would have been an absolute clinic in how to win a major if the guy in the group behind you hadn't gone completely insane at the turn. And that's what kind of makes it frustrating in ways. You know, like, you could nearly write off, oh, well, listen, he took a 7 on the road hole and that was it, you know. But, you know, I still felt there was a mistake in Cam Smith. And when he hit the second at the road hole, like, parked it in behind that bunker, you're like, okay, this is it. You know, the run had to end somewhere. Smith bogeys 17, McIlroy birdies 18. That'll probably be enough for McIlroy to maybe go on and win it by one. And then when Smith rolled in that putt on 17, you're like, holy shit, McIlroy's going to have to birdie the last two holes, you know?
Yeah.
And birdies on the road hole were hard to come by all week. And yeah, it was just a really slow kind of deflation instead of a nightmare, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way I felt watching it. He was asked afterwards if he had allowed himself to dream about winning the Open yesterday.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm only human at the end of the day. I'm not a robot. And yeah, of course, you think about it and you envision it and you want to envision it. I mean, I was literally, my hotel room is directly opposite the big yellow board on 18 there, right of the first. And like every morning I look out and I'm just trying to envision McIlroy at the top name on that leaderboard and how that would feel. And, you know, at the start of today, it was at the top, but at the start of tomorrow, it won't be. So, again, I've been close and keep knocking on the door. And again, I can't get too down on myself because the game is there. It's just a matter of staying patient.
That is a typically good answer by Rory McIlroy. Probably not the way you're supposed to think. Don't think that's the way the psychologists generally teach it to be doing too much of the... I mean, you're supposed to visualize your shots, etc. I don't know if you're supposed to think too much
about it. Not visualize the result. Visualize the process, not the result.
Yeah, but like he says, he's just a normal human being. And I don't think that's the reason that he lost. Yeah. Like we said, he didn't... Did he not freeze? He didn't. He certainly didn't have any sort of a choke or a meltdown or anything quite as dramatic as that.
Just maybe beaten by a better golfer over the course of the 4 days.
He could and say that froze a little bit, though. I mean, he did know from quite... You could see Cameron Smith coming, and he didn't respond.
Yeah, I think he said he thought he'd need to get to 20 under, and 20 under would have got him a playoff. But, you know, to say that's certainly a disappointment. That's a massive disappointment, but I don't think that it's a mental disintegration.
From Ireland's second captain show. Second captain show.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein. Protein.
This is not a dig at football people who know the game.
No respect, no honour.
Put your respect on my game.
Dog shit to bed on.
But who plays rugby?
I imagine it was like something you would expect to see in a porno movie.
No, they don't.
But they
no.
do.
Sorry, they do not.
And the balls.
Shut up, the two of you. I just want to play commentary at a goal.
Far off and I go.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like Nick.
You get the ball forward, you compete, you chase people, you close people down, you create excitement, you win balls when you shouldn't win balls, you commit yourself to the game.
Let's get right into what happened at St Andrews yesterday, or what didn't happen for Rory McIlroy at St Andrews yesterday, to be more accurate about things. Lawrence Donegan, how are you today?
Pretty good, yeah. Disappointed like the rest of the world.
Mm. You had the pleasure of attending the Open this year. How was it for you?
It was... I was there as a spectator, actually. So it was a spectator experience. It isn't that great at St Andrews. I mean, I don't want to complain because I'm sure plenty of people listening to this would love to have been there. But it is brilliant. I mean, St Andrews is... It's amazing. You've got this kind of quaint old town, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of years old. And it was really like stadium golf in places. You know, down in the loop... You know, out at 8, 9, 10, 11, down there, it was, I mean, it really was like your own self-contained little stadium. And then you get 17 and then into 18. It was magnificent. And the Open at St Andrews is always good because you can walk down the street and, yeah, I remember walking down the street in 2010 and bumping into Tom Lehman and chatting to him for, you know, you can just, it's a cool spot. The golf was phenomenal. And again, I mean, I wasn't joking. You know, I think everybody in the world was pulling for Rory yesterday. So, you know, spirits were buoyed for the first 3 days. He played brilliantly for the first 3 days. And I played pretty decently yesterday as well. But, you know, it was amazing. I don't think the next one's 2030 or something. They haven't announced it, but that's what the kind of gossip is. And it's a shame they should go back. It used to go every 5 years. They should go back every 5 years. I guess the disruption is too much for the townspeople.
Yeah, okay, maybe so. But Rory, I don't know how you even characterize this one. You know, it's a he left it behind him, I guess. Did he blow it? Did he choke? Some of those descriptions seem a bit harsh, but it was, you know, despite everything Cameron Smith did, Rory McIlroy did start four shots ahead of him. So a good round in the 60s would have had him as open champion today.
Yeah, I mean, where do you start? 36 putts. I mean, you know, that's in the pro terms against St Andrews. It's very, very different, the old course. You know, if you get it, if you hit your approach shot to 30 feet, that's like 10 feet in a pro, you know, on a PGA Tour event. So you got to factor that in. But 36 putts, you know, you just can't win a professional golf tournament with 36. You just can't. It's impossible. Yeah. So you start there. He struck the ball pretty decently. Actually, when he got, you know, he birdied 10, and you're thinking, I was there in the, you know, listen to old man time here, old father time, but, you know, Tiger in the heyday, you know, this is how Tango, remember the great stat we always used to quote with Tiger is he led after three rounds in his first 14 major, led after three rounds in 14 majors and won all 14. Mm. And you looked at that and you thought, well, Tiger's had a word with Rory here. Just, I mean, the plan of action is go out, make no mistakes,
yeah,
take your birdie chances when you get them, and let the other guys come to you. And if they come, you know, the thing with Tiger, though, nobody ever came to him. the difficulty Rory had yesterday was Cam Smith. He is he's an interesting guy, I'll tell you. Anyway, I guess we'll come on to him. But, you know, regards Rory, I mean, it was a kind of bang average round. You thought, oh, this is a quite Tigerish. It's really quite good idea. But then when he needed to turn the kind of afterburners on, it wasn't there, you know. You know, the difference between Cam Smith would have, you know, his putts went in from 30, 40 feet and Rory's kind of brushed the hole.
Do you think there was an element of, he went into it maybe thinking, you've outlined there what his psychology would have been. Do you think also he felt he was playing his playing partner, you know, and that he was, what he was doing was well enough to take care of Hovland, who just didn't perform on the day, but he maybe wasn't thinking there could be a charge from behind?
Well, the psychology of these pairings, you know, Hovland and Rory on Saturday had it, didn't they? So you're watching a guy holing putts and, you know, that kind of spurs you on. And I think that's what happened with Hovland and Rory on Saturday. And again, with the two Camerons yesterday, I mean, Cameron Young, I hope Cam Smith sends him a bottle of champagne or something, because they were at it. It was kind of thrilling in a way. There is that, you know, you think four shots. Remember Shane Lowry? I think Shane Lowry had a four shot lead at Oakmont, the US Open. It's not insurmountable. But there's probably a little bit of that. But I think that the bigger factor psychologically would have been, you know, the two guys, Hovland and Rory together, just playing kind of bang average. You're looking at somebody's playing not rubbish, but somebody's playing average, and you know, it kind of tends to, not all the time, but it can drag you down. And probably that's what happened to Rory. Because if you look at Rory's ball striking, I mean, he had a couple of skanky shots. The one bad swing, it was a swing on 14. That was a bad shot and a bad decision. But other than that, you know, you couldn't really, you know, he missed a piddly putt on three, you know, but other than that, it was kind of decent. But, you know, you're just up against a steamroller in the group ahead of you. And I guess Rory would be looking at it and think, he'd be drowning. He'd be like, my goodness, you know, I've got to match this. Mm-hmm. And then when he went for it, it just wasn't there.
Yeah, I think with Rory, I think we often have to make it a psychodrama, you know, as Michael Rosenberg in Sports Illustrated put it last night, analysing McIlroy's psyche is a popular pastime in which he often participates, but there is really no indication that his problem on Sunday was mental. Would you agree broadly with that? I mean, it does kind of still sound that, you know, the chance was still there, but he just didn't grab it when the chance was there.
Right, yeah. Compare this. I think the great comparison with it is the 2011 Masters, isn't it? He started that day with a four shot lead, didn't he? Three putted the first, put his driving two in the bunker, almost left it in the bunker with his second shot. Birdied three, but after that it was then the big one. He got to 10, and just his head was scrambled. I put it in the cabins. Remember, I tried to hit a career 3-wood off a hanging lie. There was none of that yesterday. So, if I'm Rory and I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, right, okay, plus points. there are not many, but one of it is psychologically he didn't crumble. As I say, he was found wanting on that one on the 14th, a hole that he needed to birdie at the very least. But other than that, there was no silly decisions. There was no, you know, a head scrambled, put deer in the headlight stuff. So, I mean, that would be the, you know, wasn't in any sense a psychological collapse. It was, it just got beat. He said it afterwards. You know, he was far more gracious than all the people who were kind of pulling for
the rest of us.
You know, I was just, there's a deserving winner over here. You should have sat with my 17-year-old son who was screaming at the TV. You know, so yes, no good. It wasn't psychologically, I think he was fine. It was just beaten by a better player, found wanting in that, you know, in that one. He didn't really hit an absolutely worldy shot either. You know, he got to 17, you know, played hit a great drive, had a pretty good approach.
Because lots of made about the putting, which is true. I mean, he obviously, clearly he didn't make enough putts, but he also, it wasn't like he was missing the five footers that used to bedevil him back in the day. It was just, he wasn't necessarily hitting amazing approach shots to give himself gimme putts, and then he wasn't taking those sort of, you know, 14 to 18 footers that you need at least a couple of when the other guy behind you is shooting five birdies in a row.
Again, I keep repeating myself here, sorry, but you know, the other guy was just insane. It's just insane. The guy is, you know, and technically as well, you just look at it and you think, God almighty, you know, the best he can do is get around. And it turns out that's all he really needs to do, because once he gets on the green, it's kind of lights out. He spoke about it afterwards. I've heard him speak about it before. You know, he wasn't a long hitter when he was a kid, so he really, his short game had to be mint, you know, and he is. I think, I mean, like a lot of people, I picked Smith and Rory before the tournament, and Smith I picked simply because if you look at this, there's this great stat, this three-putt avoidance stat on the PGA Tour. Smith, you know, it's basically a measure of how good a lag putter, how good a putter you are from 40, 50, 60 feet. And Smith tops the charts every year. I mean, he's there or thereabouts again this year. And, you know, and that's exactly what you need there. And, you know, you need a really imaginative short game. And, you know, that's his power. That's his superpowers. Mm. And Rory, you know, great ball striker. Good. St. Andrews always identifies really phenomenal ball strikers. So, you know, that's, you know, again, you're just lost to the better guy. Really hard to take, because you could sense. I tell you this for nothing. I guarantee you that R&A were vomiting last night. I absolutely pulling for a McIlroy win. They gave him honorary membership the R&A last week. Mm. You know why? You know Tiger, you can understand. I mean, Paul Laurie, you could probably understand, but Rory's still a young man in his prime. They would have instead to get a kind of latter day John Daly with the mullet haircut and the bad clothes. Sorry to rip on Cam Smith, but yeah.
Tell us about Cam Smith then, because you said he's an interesting guy earlier on. What did you mean by that?
I mean, he's a phenomenal player. He's not huge. I mean, there's a bit to be careful here. The kind of Aussie golf crowd are very tight, really tight. The players are tight. Well, Adam Smith was there last night watching him coming in. But he's a little bit of an outsider. I get the sense that he's a little bit of an outsider from that. You know, a little bit, you know, they're not. See, for when Adam Scott won his 2013 Masters, God almighty, the Australians were all over it. You know, because he's a hugely popular, great player, obviously, but hugely popular guy. I don't think Smith's quite in that character. There's a great admiration for his golf game, but, you know, not, you know. Again, I don't know. I shouldn't be blaspheming the guy's character here, but I don't think he's a massively popular guy. Apart from everybody, you know, loves the way he plays golf. But that's kind of it. It'll be interesting to see if he can follow this up. He's won the Players this year, and he won yesterday. Be interesting because my theories on golf are multiple, but one of them is that, you know, ultimately, you know, the great ball strikers always prevail. And I just wonder, you know, maybe this is his golden season. This is his golden patch. I think Harrington has said that all great players have an 18-month purple patch in their careers, and we might be smack bang in the middle of Cam Smith.
He was asked a question afterwards that he didn't seem too keen on answering.
Apologies for having to bring this up in these circumstances, but your name continues to be mentioned. It's been mentioned to me this week about LIV Golf. What's your position? Are you interested? Is there any truth to suggestions that you might be signing?
I just won the British Open, and you're asking about that. I think that's pretty not that good.
I appreciate that, but the question is still there. Are you interested at all? Is there any truth in that?
I don't know, mate. My team around me worries about all that stuff. I'm here to win golf tournaments.
I should explain the visuals of that as well for people. As he's being asked the initial question, and he's saying, like, I think that's not good, not, you know, being asked that. He kind of glances around at the claret jug and says, I just won the British Open, and you're asking about that. So that's his, he didn't feel that was the time or the place. Like, what did you make of that exchange, Lawrence?
Yeah, but he's probably right. But you know what? It's a press conference. He doesn't get to pick the questions. Mm-hmm. You know, man up and just answer. I mean, clearly there's something going on. So stand by. You know, that would be, I tell you what, that was the one thing at St. Andrews all week. The live chat is off the charts.
Really, yeah.
I mean, we are right in the fulcrum of it now. I think the Saudis have... it's probably a discussion for another day, but I think the Saudis have got the bit between their teeth. They've been really peed off with the PGAs. They were very high-handed at the start of this. Remember, Rory stood in front of the microphone at Riviera, said, this thing's dead in the water. Well, I don't think that went down like a cup of cold sick, as you can imagine. So the Smith stuff is rife. There's other stuff. Should we be repeating rumours? But, you know, there's a lot of chat about Matsuyama going as well. If he goes... That is the big domino, because Matsuyama won. He'll take the entire Asian market with him. He'll take the entire Asian press corps with him. It means that the Masters will never, ever ban Hideki Matsuyama from playing in their tournament. They just will never do it. So if they don't ban him, they will never ban any past champions. All the past champions have gone. Again, it's only speculation, but it's absolutely rife. I mean, just so much of it around. I guess the next 2, 3, 4 weeks will reveal a lot, and I think it's going to be pretty. The scale of it is going to be quite astonishing.
Okay, well, we'll probably come back to you on that one then, Lawrence, when that all starts happening. But just a last quick one on Rory. I mean, the consistency in the majors this year was phenomenal, really. It was a top 10 in all 4 majors.
Top 10 in all 4, yeah.
Yeah, top 5 in 3 of them. And yet he's waiting. Oh, it's still been so long since he's won one. So does this leave him better placed for next year or two, or worse?
Well, I think he said it. I mean, the only song he could sing is, you know, you got to keep putting yourself in position, and you'll eventually, you know, get over the line. Taking an isolation, it's a stunning performance in the majors this year. Really, I'm okay. Backdoored second at the Masters, but you know, he was kind of there or thereabouts for for most of the time, which is a brilliant performance. He just has to. You know, again, it's kind of I don't want to use the name Greg Norman, but I mean, it's quite reminiscent of Greg Norman in his prime. You know, he was always close, and there was always somebody chipping in, or always somebody having the round of their life, or there's all, you know, that kind of thing. But again, he's just so good. And the great thing, another plus point you can take away from the week is he putted really, really well, apart from Sunday. It was a really, by his standards, and again, his putting this year has been vastly improved. If he can keep, you know, building on that kind of those putting stats, he could be unstoppable next year, certainly in the majors.
Maybe Rory can have a nice chat with Greg Norman. Beer me, Greg, and we can have a little chat. We can bury the hatchet about all this, and I'll learn what to do.
Yeah. Now, by the way, there's going to be a Yalta summit at some point between the PGA Tour. I think we can safely put our money on that. I think the days of not speaking to each other, I think those are over. So they're going to come to the negotiating table. And the problem the PGA Tour has, they're coming with a weaker hand now. Yeah. I forgot to mention the Stenson, I don't know if it's been confirmed yet today, but that's something else. That is the ultimate slap in the face of the European Tour. I mean, for Stenson to do that, it's pretty insulting.
Yeah, I mean, Henrik Stenson is the current Ryder Cup captain, and he is expected to join LIV Golf. So obviously, he's going to be stripped of that particular honour as European captain once the news gets confirmed that he's going off. But like you're saying, it certainly seems like the whole LIV Golf thing isn't going away anytime soon anyway. Listen, Lawrence, that was great. Thank you so much.
All the best, Sean.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Sport is a great thing, Páraic, especially hurling. Our sport, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man. They're getting their award today, mixed with this brilliant blend of youth, fire and enthusiasm, and so thrilled for them. Clareman, rivals of ours all our lives. But you know, the Cranberries go up around Crow Park. Dolores, one of their own, Páraic. Magic, magic moment for them.
Well, it's a highly emotional...
Oh no, my stomach is burning here, lads, I tell you. Oh dear.
Who's going to win it, guys?
Limerick.
Excuse me?
Dowler!
On your fire!
He didn't go to blow the onion bag off the back of the net. He went to place it to the corner.
Limerick are on the brink of a historic breakthrough at Croke Park.
Limerick better wake up here because Galway are back in the game big time.
Cruised into the top of the net. Is there any into the drama, Páraic?
And Galway are within one of Limerick.
It's hard to watch.
Oh, man, I don't know what to say here.
Could he possibly, from 2-3 metres outside his own 45, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man?
That's a massive ask.
If you wanted one man in the history of hurling to hit it for you, you might want it to be Joe Kenning.
I think the long wait is over.
How long is it again, the wait?
Well, since 2007.
Well, 1973 is the last time they won.
Limerick have it! Limerick are coming away with it!
Yeah! Oh, yes,
if the rest of the world only knew about this sport, this is incredible.
Limerick have beaten Galway! Woo! 1973! And today...
Murph, I got to hand it to you. Very good. You've got a very good spot here. That audio bed... celebrating Limerick's 2018 All-Ireland final victory came into your mind yesterday when you watched Anthony Daly put across some, I would say, eerily similar views in the RTÉ TV studios post-match.
Dolores, gotta be good to her, one of their own. You know, some scenes, what champions is right, Joanne, and you know, the Cats, what a county, what an All-Ireland, Joanne, what a sport this game is. There's nothing like it. There never will be. Played in July, played in September. There's no game like hurling.
That is uncanny.
Yes, son. The Dalo stub speech. Yeah. Got another airing yesterday. Well, I mean, listen, the man just loves hurling.
He loves hurling.
There are
he
only does. So many ways that you can express your love. You know, if I told you on every day of the week that I love you, and maybe I only do it, you know, we know each other for, this relationship's been going on now for, I think, 19 years. And maybe I don't say it often enough. But if I told you that I loved you every day on, it doesn't mean that I don't mean it, or that I mean it less today than I meant it yesterday.
Yeah,
just because
I keep
saying it doesn't mean that the power of the words is lost.
No,
I love you on in much the same way that Anthony Daly loves hurling. And if Anthony Daly tells hurling that he loves it every single day of the week, then that's not a problem for me. As far as I'm concerned, the feeling is true. The sentiments are true. The words may be old, but the sentiment is still very true.
More hurling chat for you tomorrow. We have Flynn and McConville coming up, looks like on Wednesday. We'll be covering the knockout stages of the Euros. And a quick reminder for World Service members.
And who wrote it?
I can't remember his name.
I'll tell you who wrote it.
Later this week, to coincide with the final week of this year's Tour de France, we're putting out a brand new episode of the I'll Tell You Who Wrote It Second Captain's Book Club, featuring Rough Ride by Paul Kimmage, one of the greatest sports books of them all, being reviewed by our own Richie Sadler. So that's all going to be happening in the coming days, all the live sport. Oh, just there's a lot going on. It's a good time to become a member. To hear all that, you will need to sign up on secondcaptains.com for a fiver a month plus VAT. All episodes of the pod are ad-free if you join up. The Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Thanks, Ciarán.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for listening. We do hope to see some of you during the week. Take care.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.